Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable for this Thursday, the 22nd of August, 13 minutes past 9 o'clock. Very nice to have you with us. And let me introduce our panel. Then we'll also let you know how you can join in on the conversation. It's very easy. And then we'll actually get to the said conversation, which is even sort of why you're tuning in, I hope. Let's let us begin with WAMC's Alan Chartok. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning. And if I may just mention, Joe, I know you'll be forgiving. The Berkshire Ramblers will be performing at the Guthrie Center on August 31st. And that'll be great fun. And we always have a gathering of all the WAMCers who get together and fill the place. But if you want a ticket, now's the time to get it at the Guthrie Center in Great Barrington.
Excellent. The Guthrie Center. And this is August 31st.
Yes, it is.
That's otherwise, that's next Saturday, I believe. It's a week from this coming Saturday.
Yeah, I believe that's correct.
All right. Well, very, very cool. We also have Terry Gibson with us. He is SUNY New Paltz Communications Professor and former New York State Senator. Good morning, Terry. How are you?
Good morning. I'm on a powdered sugar high right now. And I just want to thank you for that.
You can have another donut.
I'm getting there.
You can have
another donut. Those donuts were delicious.
Well, you're very welcome. Investigative reporter, you know what you know, sometimes I write these in the car, not when I'm driving, but when Kelly's driving. So I put down, when I was writing it last night, I put down investigative Armeo. Instead of investigative journalist Rosemary Armeo, I put investigative Armeo Rosemary Armeo.
I like that.
Yeah,
I'm putting that on my business card.
I think you should.
So our investigative Armeo is there.
We were just doing the media project, and boy, did she let me have it over the Fredo incident. You know, the famous Fredo incident in the Times.
Yes.
She got
it's
on
just
my
because
case.
You're so wrong.
That's what I love about you.
Oh, dear. And then we come to the sad part of our morning. Fran Berman, who has been with us for several years now, is the Edward Hamilton Distinguished Professor of Computer Science at RPI, or was, right?
No, I still am. I'm not dead.
Faculty Associate of the Bergman Klein Center for Internet and Society at Harvard University and Harvard Data Science Initiative Fellow. And you'll be going to Harvard
for 9 months.
For 9 months.
Yeah. Just,
and then you promise you'll come back.
Just long enough to gestate fabulous ideas.
Okay. But then you'll come back.
Then I'll come back. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Hey, friend, that ain't right.
Yeah, we're going to miss you. We're going to miss you horribly.
That ain't right.
Aww.
I feel dual feelings here. One, incredibly grateful that we've had you here for so long, and then, you know, that now we have to share you with Harvard. Kind of screw them, you know.
But, I'm blushing, but I love being on the radio.
Well,
I'll come back for sure.
We love having you here. Yes, and if you visit, just let us know. We'll fit you in.
Okay.
We did it with
Rosemary.
They
do all the time for me. Yes, yeah. It's fun.
Oh, cool. All right.
All right.
Hand me a donut.
So celebrate with a donut. All right. Good morning, everybody. Welcome. Let's get started. We have a lot to discuss. who is our chosen one, by the way? Have we figured that out? Okay. Let's talk about the deficit first. The New York Times reporting this morning the budget deficit on a path to surpass $1 trillion under this president. The federal budget is growing faster than expected. It's the spending and tax cut policies. Apparently, they're forcing the U.S. to borrow increasing sums of money. The deficit, the gap between what the government takes in through taxes and other sources of revenue and what it spends, will reach $960 billion for the 2019 fiscal year, which ends September 30th. That gap is expected to widen to $1 trillion for the 2020 fiscal year. That, according to the CBO, otherwise known as the Congressional Budget Office. They have updated their forecasts, and they released them on Wednesday. The updated projections show deficits rising and damage from Mr. Trump's tariffs mounting faster than the office had previously predicted. In May, the budget office said it expected a deficit of $896 billion only and $892 billion for 2020. Now expected to be over $1 trillion. I have two questions, Alan, to begin with you.
Sure.
One is, there was a time when Republicans cared about such things. When did that go away?
Yeah, that's a very good question. I think you've answered it for yourself. and the, by asking it, right?
And then the other one, the other question is just how big a deal will this be going into the an election year?
Well, that depends on the opposition. That depends on the Democrats. I mean, clearly, it's one thing to say that you got $1 billion, but then you got to start talking about who pays the tax. In other words, the American people are paying interest on that $1 billion when they borrow the $1 billion. And if people understand that they can't have a school because you're paying a tax, that's a whole different story, isn't it?
Well, it seems it. Rosemary? Yeah.
Well, to me, you know, I think this is all planned. I think that they haven't stopped caring about the deficit. This is a maneuver. They've cut taxes, and now the next step, I think it'll happen in Trump's second term, will be to cut entitlement programs, which has long been on their agenda. So here the argument is, oh, we've got to get this under control. We're going to have to cut Medicare. Forget Medicare for Medicaid for all. And go after Social Security.
No, you mean
as
Medicare.
Well.
Frodo,
Fredo. I'm tongue-tied this morning.
I'm just getting even. That's all.
I do think that this is that they are not upset that the deficit has gone up. I definitely don't think they're surprised. There certainly was enough warning that this was going to happen, and that their attack will be we fix it by slashing, not by restoring tax cuts.
Here's the thing. I'm sorry. They don't give a damn. I mean, you know, Donald Trump doesn't have to worry about where he's going to sleep or where his family is going to sleep or the rest of it. So the American people pay the tax. That's what it is.
No, they definitely don't care. And it's hard, I think, for the average American to sort of see, you know, how this affects them. And they're playing off that a lot. This is coupled with the news that I heard this morning, and I think you guys must have heard it too, that they miscalculated the job rate.
Job rate, yeah.
And it was we got 500,000 less jobs than they had said. And, you know, this is sort of roughly the same number of jobs that were there when Trump started office. So, you know, he hasn't built the economy by creating more jobs. He's spending more money, and his campaign promise was not just to lower the deficit, but to pay the darn thing off.
And
so
Fran,
where did that go?
And Fran, you can see how nervous they are about that. They obviously knew about this, and they've been in denial for a week now. Everybody, they called out all the troops to say, no problem.
Yeah,
we're not really going down, but we are.
Yeah.
One of the things that the report points out is that what we know is that corporations and the wealthy 1% continue not to pay their fair share in taxes. And if we can ever actually get our hands on Donald Trump's tax returns, and it does become clear that he has not been paying taxes or not been paying his fair share of taxes, that could become relevant when we start looking at this deficit issue.
So how does this work with Citizens United? If corporations are people and people have to pay taxes, how come corporations don't have to?
It's a great question. Or why are they not? I mean, they've
Well, because Congress...
It's a silly question, but a real question.
Because Congress passes laws that exempt them from taxes. State governments pass laws that exempt them from taxes. So
they're not breaking the law.
They're doing it legally, which is slightly different than the Citizens United issue, which is a Supreme Court ruling which allows corporations to give as much money as they want to political candidates.
Right.
But what's even worse about this is the way in which the American public who know that GE, for example, I think pays nothing. Isn't that correct?
Correct.
I think I'm right about that. And Amazon, you know, the number one corporation in the world doesn't pay. So you sit there and you say, oh boy, and I hope I'm right about those things, but I think I am. And the American people say, ho hum, another day and another day in government. There's no reaction to it.
Well, even in this story here, Republicans are talking about rather than going after GE, Amazon, the places where they could really bring in an enormous amount of revenue to help decrease the deficit, they immediately start talking about cutting Social Security, cutting Medicare. Trying to find ways to take more money away from the poor instead of the wealthy that actually have the money to contribute.
You know, that's so interesting. I think you're onto something here because, you know, the poor, you know, I hate to say it this way, but I don't think people care that much. I think the poor who often don't participate in the political process, which they certainly ought to, it's as if it's okay. But Social Security, that's another story, because everybody is on Social Security, and that's why it's so protected by, and why they have been so it's been so difficult for them to attack.
To what Fran was saying earlier, the president, while he was campaigning in April of 2016, said that he could get rid of the debt. He was asked if he would ever be open to tax increases as part of that to solve the problem, and he said, we won't need to do that. The power is trade. Our deals are so bad. And he said, I'm going to renegotiate all of our deals, the big trade deals that we're doing so badly on with China, $505 billion this year in trade. We're losing with everybody. And even at the time, of course, many people, including his opponents in the primary, said, well, that doesn't work. It just doesn't add up. And yet, at the end, after the election, many people said if they felt that the best chance of erasing that deficit was in the hands of
This is just like why Americans are such suckers for diet solutions. You can lose weight without giving up chocolate pudding, and and you never have to exercise,
donuts.
And it's
cinnamon
magic.
Mini donuts. Yeah.
And that's exactly what they've bought here, is that we will cut the deficit without losing any of our entitlements, and taxes won't have to go up. It doesn't work.
But, you know, sooner or later, though, if the economy continues to spiral in this crazy direction where it's clear that Trump's policies are just a disaster, sooner or later, the American people are going to wake up and want to hold someone accountable for this. And I think it really can impact Donald Trump's ability to get reelected.
So, again, we have to hope that the economy tanks to get rid of him. I hope that's not true.
I hope. It's
yeah, but the
either.
American people are not homogeneous. There's a bunch of different people, and they have a bunch of different points of view. And, you know, I mean, Trump got elected because a sufficient number of them were disenfranchised.
Plus the Russians.
But any politician that steps out and says, I'm going to cut your Social Security, I'm going to cut your Medicare, is risking an enormous amount in their political capital. And if we reach that point, there's going to be a dynamic shift in elections.
And I know I'm gonna say something just incredibly naive and stupid here, but any other president that would have, right? In a normal cycle, if a president says, we heard this with what was it, George Bush, right? If are you or was it Reagan? Are you better off now than you were 4 years ago?
Reagan.
So if any other person who said, you know, I read my lips, no new taxes, George Bush, then it destroys them. We also used to call Reagan the Teflon president, but this president, nothing sticks. And I don't get.
Yeah, I don't get that either.
Well, we don't. Wait. We don't know that nothing sticks. We have the polling shows that people don't like them, that they don't agree with them. We have to see whether it sticks or not. We won't see that until the election. But I think a lot is sticking to this guy.
But I agree with you, and I understand your point, Alan. I will also say, though, things that would have even derailed candidates 4 years ago, you know, that would have derailed any other candidate, did not derail him. I mean, you just look at the Access Hollywood tape that I think would have destroyed any other candidate. Didn't touch him, I don't understand that, and it seems to continue. But I hope you're right, Terry.
All I can do is hope that the polling that I'm seeing from legitimate, respected polling companies is accurate. That his numbers continue to tank,
like
with independents, that they continue to tank with many Americans, and that his chances of getting reelected are becoming slimmer and slimmer. Although his base continues to stick with him, but
it's the middle.
It's always been the
purples. And I got to tell you, the way that it's going now, the polling, I think, is correct. The question, as was raised by Tim Versalotti in the Western New England poll, is who the opponent's going to be. Because if he's running against himself, maybe you throw him out. But if he has an opponent who isn't doing the job and people don't care about, that's another whole story.
Yeah, I think that's right, Alan. I think that it's really important for there to be a really strong opponent, that doesn't turn people off. And, you know, it's taken me a while to sort of understand and acknowledge how much electability matters because, you know, I have various opinions about the 437 people, now 435, running for a Democratic nominee. But electability, I think, will matter a lot.
You know, but back to the deficit, which is where we started here. Let's not forget that what's happening here is that we are not bringing in enough revenue in this country to pay for very important infrastructure projects. We're talking about highways and bridges and water treatment plants and sewage treatment plants and all the things that really make our communities function. And you can see as you drive through this state, other states, other communities, where it's beginning to become very visible that we're not making the kinds of investments in our communities that need to be done to be sustainable. And that is going to be noticed by the voters. That's going to be noticed by the American people. And at some point, they are going to look to the leaders, and Trump is the leader, and hold them accountable. And I think that will really hurt him moving forward in the election.
I hope that that's true, but I have my doubts. I think that a bridge collapses and a road falls apart and people are killed and we care about it for, what, a week and a half, just like a shooting. We care about shooting. We don't have gun control. Everyone knows, supposedly, that something's needed, but we don't act. I think it's the same with infrastructure. It should be done. Same with the deficit.
Well,
it's not something that affects you day to day.
By the way, just to add to what Terry's saying, the cyber infrastructure is really woefully inadequate as well. And this is why people are getting their Social Security numbers stolen, why there's data breaches all the time, that are having really serious financial and other kinds of catastrophic consequences on people. And it's the lack of government infrastructure, legislation, policy, data privacy, all of that kind of stuff that is standing in the way.
But when you can't, to Rosemary's point, when you can't access clean drinking water from your faucet every day, that does affect you. When you can't actually get to your place of work because your bridge is out, that affects you.
We have a break. We're going to have to take it. We'll be right back. We'll continue our conversation. You're listening to The Roundtable.
His spurs were jingling as he approached. He was singing this song.
Spirit Family Reunion from their new album Free Ride, playing at Hawks and Reed Performing Arts Center in Greenfield, Massachusetts this Saturday. And you can find out more by going to spiritfamilyreunion.com. Also check out our website, wamc.org/roundtable, where the playlist is posted. Welcome back to the panel. Alan Chartok, Terry Gibson, Rosemary Armeo, and Fran Berman this morning. We have letters. We'll go to those and then we'll move on. Diane writes, Social Security was created as a standalone fund paid for by myself and millions of others. This money belongs to all Americans who spend 40-plus years paying into the fund. This is outright theft by the U.S. government while billions are being given away to Trump's wealthy donors, etc. This money should have been invested for the workers putting into the fund, as the states did for their employees, such as teachers and such. That is from Diane, who also says, glad Rosemary is back.
Thank you.
Aww.
Dylan writes to us and says the new Democratic candidate has two jobs. One, lead the moral realignment of American politics. Trump has created the fissure in the Republican Party. The Democrat needs to claim the moral high ground. Given another 4 years of Trump's America, the only message the candidate really needs to remember is Trump equals bankrupt, 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 financially, diplomatically, and morally. My only source of doubt is that this was the 2016 Hillary strategy, but she's been proven right. Maybe it's a sound strategy in need of a better candidate. Anybody want to weigh in on that?
Well, I think that's right. I think Hillary was a lousy candidate. Well, you can make a noise, Rosemary, but you know, she got the votes, but she still lost in those key states. I think a different candidate might have done better, but we'll never really know, right? I mean, we'll just never really know.
Yeah, and also to the writer's point, it shouldn't surprise us that Trump's economic policies are a disaster or that the deficit is increasing, because his history of bankruptcy and business failure is exactly a reflection of his management style, which is incompetent.
But the point is, he still stands. In other words, you're right. You're absolutely right about what you're saying, but he got away with it. In fact, he's president of the United States right now, despite all of his failures.
Well, I guess everybody's still trying to figure out a way to get him out. But
Rich writes, yeah. Corporate taxes. I wonder if corporate taxes are just like tariffs. They pass them on to consumers. Let's tax more of the corporate management individuals with the higher incomes. That from Rich in Amherst.
Okay.
Long letter. I'll go through as much as I can do it here. Garrett writes, bad optics for sure and partly related to the tax code. This is corporations not paying taxes. This is a red herring. But companies like Amazon have lost money for years so they can offset their more recent earnings with losses carried forward. That will eventually end, and their employees pay taxes and they inject money into the economy, assuming they haven't been showered by tax breaks by the towns and states where they're located. Amazon pays taxes there too. Amazon's impact on local economies is a different matter, but all corporations strive to keep all their expenses down and their stock prices up.
You know, that's kind of true, but it's also Amazon and companies like that have more opportunity than your average small business, than, you know, lots of companies. And so, you know, they play the game well. They do invest in their communities and in their people, and that's great. But, you know, I don't know. It's not so clear to me that they should be getting as special treatment as they do.
Hey, I pay my taxes, and I don't like it, but I pay them.
Well, that's right. Yeah, you do what you have to do. Ellen writes in and says, Tom Friedman was on CNN last night, and he said that if Trump is defeated, it will be because the electorate is exhausted from these daily reversals, fights, threats, etc. He said he's exhausted, and frankly, so am I. Where are Pelosi and Schumer? Where are our representatives? By the way, an IRS leaker has just revealed Trump is involved in trying to make sure his taxes are not audited. Where are the people who are being paid to protect us? Anyone?
Hello?
Well, I think they're there.
It's a good
you know,
question.
I just think it's an impossibly complex situation, and you hear what the news reports. And the news reports the latest 15 weird tweets that you got in the last 7 minutes.
It reports more than that, Fran. That's not fair. I think that the people who protect us have been fired, blunted, smushed down under this administration, and that we are definitely less protected than we have been. Look at the Agriculture Department. Look at the State Department.
Right.
Look at our police departments around the country, that the Justice Department used to watch over them to see that they were like not beating up on minorities. None of those things are happening anymore.
So where are the Democrats?
But I do think that the news reports sort of the stuff that they think people will read. And in fact, we do read that stuff. You know, I'm more interested in the Kardashians than, you know, what's happening in Europe. That's not right.
Okay, and that's the point I always make, that I read the Kardashians and all the other news.
We're culpable.
You can do both. You don't have to not report gossip and entertainment, and it's not like that distracts you. It's not even the same people reporting on that.
I want to know where the Democratic leaders are. That's what I want to
know.
Yeah,
that's a good
question.
You
know, who, because that is what this is all about. You know, here's this marketer, if you want to use that word, which is almost too nice for him. This marketer who puts this stuff forward, he goes, every day there's something new that he throws in, buy Greenland, do this, do that. And the Democrats, including Chuck Schumer, I'm sorry to say this, because I used to have a lot of faith in him, are basically silent. There was a moment there where I thought that Nancy Pelosi was stepping up. Now I'm not so sure because I don't hear from her. So where are the Democrats to do this stuff?
Well, when you're talking about Democratic leaders, I think you have to first sort of reassess what it means to be a leader. What is the definition of a leader? I mean, we're talking about an individual that has to have a message that resonates with a lot of people and has the ability to unite a lot of people and to get them to follow them in a specific direction. And we don't have a lot of people in the Democratic Party at the national level that are really fitting into that mold right now.
My point exactly.
Actually, the one that probably is fitting it the most right now, if that's the definition, is AOC. She definitely has the ability to connect with a large group of people, and they follow her in a very dedicated way. And we need more leaders like her that represent more generations than just hers.
But unfortunately, that seems to be driving the other Democratic leaders crazy.
Well, because they've met their match. They've met someone who understands how to use social media. They've met someone who understands how to connect with the American people, that is connected in a grassroots way. You know, AOC's strength is that she's very grounded in reality. She has lived the life of an average American citizen who's had to find a way to get by and survive. And you have to at some point realize that Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer, while at some point in their life they did live that life, they haven't lived it in a very long time. And so they're just not as grounded as they need to be to connect with the American people.
Yeah, well, I don't know that, to be fair, you know, I'm an admirer of AOC on most things, but not all. And I don't know that the American people are willing to go along with, for example, democratic socialism. There doesn't seem to be an indication of that. And I'll tell you who understands that better than anybody else, Donald Trump. He'd like to paint the entire Democratic Party as AOC. So somehow there's a little bit of an inconsistency with what you're saying there.
Well, so I don't think it's inconsistency. I think it's just sort of a hole. Like I did say we need other leaders, too, to step in and sort of represent other generations. And this is where Joe Biden should really be stepping in to fill that hole right now. When we think of a Democratic leader, that should be the name that comes up immediately. And he has the ability to counter that socialism message and to really fill that spot in the middle.
So
that,
then how
that
come—
That would be a good strategy for him.
What you say. But how come— But then how come his numbers keep going up and the others keep going down? Why is that, that the Democrats in this country who are being polled on this like Biden and his numbers keep going up because of his moderation, I believe? I don't like it, but I think it's undeniable.
Ellen, how would you answer that question? Because I don't know. This mystifies me.
How would I answer what question?
How would you answer the question you just asked?
Well, I think you have to suggest, I would suggest to you that Biden has a strategy. Now, there are going to be people who write me letters and say Biden stinks, don't talk about Biden so much and the rest of us. But Biden is doing very well in the polls. Now, whether he continues to do that, whether in these early primaries he gets upset, I don't know. But right now he's doing well because most of the people who got elected in the United States Congress when they just took over were moderates. They weren't AOC. They were moderates who were in the middle. And I think Biden may have a strategy, I hope he does, which is you win the nomination and then you do what has to be done. But maybe he won't. I don't know.
There's an interesting article in the New York Times this morning that talks about Biden's poll numbers, and they say that they mask an enthusiasm gap, that Biden is coasting in the national poll survey, show him ahead of the Democratic rivals in hypothetical matchups against President Trump. He's maintained a lead in Iowa all summer despite facing months of controversies over his record and his campaign missteps. But less than 2 weeks before Labor Day, when presidential campaigns traditionally kick into high gear, there are signs of a disconnect between Hale's relatively rosy poll numbers and excitement for his campaign on the ground in the state of Iowa that begins the presidential nominating process. I don't know, is it...
You know, that's exactly what they said about Hillary Clinton. That is word for word. The enthusiasm gap and, you know, the bad candidate that she was, Alan. Biden may have that same problem.
Well,
I think
it's true.
Way too early, and I think that Elizabeth Warren also has a strategy. And she's not up with Biden now, but it's very early, and she knows that. She doesn't need to be up as far as he is right now. I also love AOC, but I don't think she is right now the hope of the Democratic Party, certainly not the hope to get rid of Trump. I'm not ready to write off Pelosi yet. I think she's doing just what Fran was advising the media do, is like, keep your eye on the main topic, and that's impeachment. And I think she's trying to contain that now. She's looking at the investigation. She's looking at strategy. And she is a hope for Democrats who want to see a change.
Yeah, I think she's done a really good job, by the way.
Yeah, I don't disagree with much of that. I think that's right. She has a strategy. She's staying with her strategy. You know, it's clear the American Democrats want impeachment. She's been able to manage that pretty well, despite the fact that everybody in her conference, or that a majority of her conference, now want him impeached. So I think she's done well with that. And we'll have to see. I mean, I just don't know what's going to happen in Iowa. But it is certainly possible that there'll be a Biden reversal there.
Let's take a break. When we continue, we will go on with other stories, and we'll check in with what you have to say. Panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Alan Chartok, Terry Gibson, Fran Berman. Her last day. And, well, for a while anyway.
Yeah.
And Rosemary Armeo. Good morning, all. We go to, we go to Denmark. There, the president is attacking the Danish prime minister for her nasty comments about his interest in the U.S. purchase of Greenland. We did talk about this yesterday, but the president again lashed out at the prime minister, Mette Frederiksen, saying that the leader of the U.S. ally had made nasty comments about his interest in having the United States purchase Greenland. To quote the president, "I thought it was not a nice statement, the way she blew me off," Trump told reporters at the White House on Wednesday. "She shouldn't treat the United States that way. She said absurd." She did. She said it was absurd that he wanted to buy Greenland, the president. She said absurd. That's not the right word to use.
Did anybody else have...
I can think of a lot of other words.
It's funny.
Did anybody else have a shiver coming down their back when he said that's not the way the United States should be treated?
Yeah.
In other words, did it bring you back to the 1930s at all, you know, to Hitler and to, you know, the idea that we, the Germans, have been disrespected? It was awful, I thought.
Well, it's her own fault. She should have written a love letter. Kim Jong-un got the idea. Why can't she?
And let me just say that the New Oxford American Dictionary defines absurd as wildly unreasonable, illogical, or inappropriate. I think that's exactly the right word.
Seems like it falls in all three of those categories.
Three of those categories.
Yeah, but we want you to give us, we want you to sell us something you don't want to sell. And it's absurd if you disrespect the United States by not doing that. Doesn't that send some shivers down your back?
Well, but in two ways, right? I mean, in your way, absolutely. But also just it's a little scary that's what he's worried about.
I swear I thought this was an Onion story when I first heard it. I did. I thought it was a story from the Onion.
And I know people so easily say that it's a distraction and he's using it to distract. But I don't know. I mean, this is why, as Rosemary was saying earlier about so many people bringing up, again, mental stability. You know, it does. You do. I'm not saying it does. It is. It does. But it does make you wonder what's going on there.
It does. Yeah.
But, you know, it's him. It's just it's Trump as raw as he can be. It's not a game. He's not making this up. I don't think it's planned. It's not strategic. It's just him. It's how his brain works and what comes out of his mouth. And it's very consistent.
He likes it. He's enjoying this, and we're accepting it. There are journalists standing out on the lawn yelling questions at him with the sound of the helicopter.
Right.
We've given up press conferences. What the heck?
Yeah, the only time we hear from the president now is he's screaming at the top of his lungs to try to be heard over the helicopter sound.
It's everything. I know that's a small and symbolic thing, maybe, but it's part of the chaos.
It is.
But it's working, right, Rosemary? I mean,
it's working for Trump. I am so depressed.
It's pathetic. We just shouldn't stand for it as a civilization. No civilization should stand for it.
Right.
I will. I'll just say that the comments on Denmark. This is according to the Washington Post. Trump's comments came during a rambling 35-minute back and forth with reporters outside the White House, where he reversed his position on some issues facing his administration while also reiterating comments that have already sparked several rounds of controversy this week. So, a great
hits. You think that was a back and forth?
And to what point is all of this?
Yeah, that's a good point, yeah.
To what point is all of this? What is it that we achieve from this? I mean, this is not how you unite people. This is not how you get people to work with you towards common goals. There is is no upside to treating other leaders like this. There's no upside to treating anyone like this.
But well, Terry, you know, you do you think he cares about any of that?
Yeah, you know, I agree
is
with
there
that.
Is there a common goal? Does he care yeah. about
but
getting people together?
But we are the receivers of.
Yeah, well, he's a narcissist.
I agree.
That.
But you know, we are the receivers of his inability to be able to function as a human being, and we really should step up and do something about it.
We should have listened to him. He said, "I am the only one who can help." He has no interest in unity or in building a coalition. He wants to be the I'm the one who matters. Every statement he has made as a campaigner and as a governor has been, I'm your dictator.
And now
believe
it's
and
even
trust
worse.
In me.
Yeah, yeah I am the chosen one.
Yeah, I'm the chosen one. I'm
the
Messiah.
Worst, yeah.
Somebody had to do it, talking about the tariffs that have become a drag on the economy, and then went on to chastise his predecessors for not taking a tougher line with Beijing. Someone had to do it, he said, before looking skyward and proclaiming, I am the chosen one.
Wow.
Michael says, you guys continually neglect to consider slash mention one of the main reasons why nothing sticks to Trump. The majority of Republicans will go to their graves before admitting Hillary was the better choice. I know this firsthand because my mother is one of those Republicans. Keep up the good work.
Thank you, Michael.
I agree.
Kevin writes, in response to Joe saying nothing sticks to Trump, I agree. I have several friends that don't care what he does, so I believe there is some buyer's remorse, but some of his 40% base were so angry to see a black president for 8 years that it doesn't matter what he does. Peter said, what? It's not that we need more revenue. This is on the deficit. We need to decrease defense spending and redirect those funds. Almost 900 military bases? What? Are we at war? Really? It's one of the untouchable topics. Defense overspending. Accept the reality. We are an empire. Read history. We know what happens to empires. Love y'all. Peace.
Yeah, that's true. We have not only the biggest army in the world by far, military, the biggest military in all of history in all of the world. And yet still we have to contribute more. Definitely defense overspending. And we don't discuss that.
And by the way, since war is going the way of cyber war, we're woefully inadequate
Correct.
In that space.
Correct. Yeah, we're not putting the funds where it should
we're
be.
We're not putting the funds where it should
so
be.
So you want to cut the deficit? That's where we go. You move money into infrastructure and take it out of the military.
You make it secure. This is not, by the way, this is not exciting news, right?
No,
this
it is isn't. We just solved the whole country's problems.
It's not
Listen
exciting
to us.
News. Improve education, improve infrastructure. You know, not exciting. These are not exciting things.
Don't call people names. I'd add that one, too.
Yeah.
Get off Twitter. I'd add that one.
Luke says, great discussion as usual. I quibble with Joe when he says nothing sticks to Trump. Stuff sticks, and the polls and the 2018 Democratic victories prove that. But Trump doesn't care. He's shameless and just keeps going, and people with power are scared to hold him to account. Also, people forget that he was urged to drop out after the Access Hollywood tape, but Bannon allegedly talked him into holding on. But he did hold on, and people voted for him. That's the point. That's what I don't think.
Yeah, but did they vote for him because this is the scariest part?
I know.
Because of the Access Hollywood tape.
Right.
There were those in this country who did.
Oh, God.
Support
impressed.
It. And I also think that, you know, stuff does may stick for a while, but my God, may get letters on this too. But as of today, as of August 22nd, 2018, what impact did the Mueller report have?
Well,
longer term, maybe.
Yeah,
longer
I think Congress is working on the Mueller report. Yeah. You're seeing a creep up in the Democrats supporting impeachment, and that's coming as they're reading the Mueller report.
Yeah.
So I don't think that's
But they're not going to do it.
I don't think they're what's missing, and you're right about this, is there's no public uproar. There's no the public didn't say, we read it. This is outrageous. Do something. That's not going to happen.
Those numbers haven't changed.
You know, it's evolution, not revolution. There's a lot of things that are many-step processes rather than, you know, you read the Mueller report and everything's different. You know, I don't know. I think that's just not a one-step process.
Ricky writes, hi, panel. Was it Iran that infiltrated our election system in 2016? Was it Iran that created fake profiles on social media to sway potential voters to vote Republican? Was it Iran that sold a missile defense system to Turkey, an American ally, against the protest of America? Was it Iran that was experimenting on weapons to then have a catastrophic disaster? Yet we hear nothing from this president about Russia. But about Iran, go figure.
You're wrong.
I think
we do hear about Russia. Yeah. He wants them back into the World Summits.
Yeah. I truly believe he belongs to them. I think that's what it's all about. I think if you take a look from the very beginning when he said to those Russians, I wanted to get rid, I fired him so that I fired the FBI director, Comey, so that to get rid of the Russian thing, he's in their pockets. Uh-huh. I think that's what this is all about.
I think he wants to be. He wants to be part of. He wants to be part of the dictator club. Wherever there's mm-hmm. a dictator, he wants to be a part of that club. And I think that some of the dictators maybe enjoy the attention, but probably don't actually want him in the club at the end of the day.
Before we go to break, I read Corey's letter, who says, Trump is the president we deserve. I'm getting a little tired of the left complaining about the loss of morality in the United States because he is president. Our nation has been aggressively bombing and killing people in poor countries actively for the last 20 years and even longer, more covertly. The anti-war left has virtually vanished from the scene, so I have a hard time with the left lecturing us about morality when they won't stand up against American imperialism. I'll give Trump the credit he deserves in this area. He's the first president in decades who's speaking out against aggressive war and is trying to tamp down the military-industrial complex. Unfortunately, he's not a very learned man and is easily swayed, but at least he is trying. Where are Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren on the war issue?
He's not trying to tamp down the military-industrial complex. He's trying to put a lot of extra money into that. So that I don't get.
I don't know what to make of that.
Let's talk about it during the break.
Okay.
And we'll come back and then some donuts. We'll have a break and then we'll we'll invite Ray into our little donut party. We'll be right back after this. Music from the Spirit Family Reunion playing Hawks and Reed at Performing Arts Center in Greenfield, Massachusetts this Saturday, 7 o'clock, spiritfamilyreunion.com for more information. You can also see all of the tracks that we play, our playlist, on our website, wamc.org/roundtable. Alan Chartok is here, Terry Gibson, Fran Berman, and Rosemary Armeo. We welcome your letters, panel at wamc.org. Kirsten writes to us and says, President Trump's comments about the Prime Minister of Denmark are absurd and misogynistic. Has he ever said anything like this about comments made by male leaders of countries? I think Kirsten was listening to us during the break.
Maybe.
No, male leaders write him love letters.
Marty, not all of them.
Marty says the State of the Union address always has a response from somebody from the other party. This country needs somebody from the Democratic Party to have a response to the rhetoric and lies that Trump sends out every single day. At least that would give the public some balance.
By the way, it's never made any sense to me why the State of the Union has a rebuttal. It's the State of the Union. It's the opinion of the leader of the country. Period. Why would it need
a
rebuttal?
So it's not everybody's opinion.
Well, it's
not
everybody's
biased
opinion,
point of view of the guy in charge.
A rebuttal? I don't know. It's never made any sense.
Daniel says 11 days after a white nationalist walked into a Walmart to murder Mexicans, we are talking about Greenland. He knows exactly what he is doing.
Yeah. That's I agree with that.
Sad but true.
Yeah. Mike says, why does no one make the connection that if Trump has money to buy Greenland, where's the money to restore our flooded farmland? Has Trump ever spoken publicly about our troubled agricultural economy? We're in a perfect storm with tariffs and weather to severely damage one of our most important economic and, I would argue, national defense sectors.
Sad to say that's probably too thoughtful for the level of thinking that's happening in the White House right now.
What has he ever thought about agriculture?
Yeah.
Jonathan.
He doesn't even eat vegetables.
Do we know that?
Is that
chocolate
true?
Cake and hamburgers.
Oh, okay. That's... Jonathan writes, Dear panel, first a brief comment, then a question. The most upsetting aspect of the whole Trump phenomenon is the 38, 40, or perhaps 42% who stick without unquestionably.
True.
My question, if and when the Democrats regain the White House, how long will it take to restaff the Department of Agriculture, the State Department, the EPA, and a host of agencies with real educated experts and scientists in their respective fields? Under the radar of the Greenland nonsense, Trump is doing terrible harm to American institutions, including the politicization of the Justice Department and the intelligence agencies, etc. That from Jonathan.
I'd be really interested in knowing how many of the civil servants are gone, because my guess is that they're being contained and restricted, but, you know, he's not sort of, he can't empty out all the civil servants. You're seeing the top political appointees going through the revolving door. So I'd be interested in the data behind what Jonathan says. I mean, truly interested.
The other problem, of course, is that when you talk about those people, I mean, the early reports were that they stuck in for a little while.
Yeah.
And such agencies like the State Department and the EPA, and then they went running for the hills because they just couldn't, they weren't doing anything. They were just, but you do wonder, will they come back? You hope so.
I know a lot of people, specifically in government R&D agencies, and they are super depressed because this, of course, has it impacted them as well. But and people have left. I mean, I'm on the Council for the National Endowment for the Humanities, and we've seen a lot of people leave there. But there's a lot of people that are hanging in there, and they're doing great.
It just goes to show, when you have a government that's run by a person that only cares about himself, that everything beneath him begins to disintegrate, and that includes the infrastructure of our, not only our physical infrastructure, but of our state departments, of our critical departments like agriculture. It was mentioned. Yeah. All the reports that you read show that all departments in our government, federal government, are quickly becoming depleted of people that really understand what's going on, and that they're increasingly being run by partisan hacks that are appointed by Trump on a very temporary basis. It's terrifying.
You know, farmers are still for Trump. I'm not saying all farmers are for Trump, but as a major group, they are. And that's fascinating to me. I don't know what that's all about. And there's another observation I would make, and that is life is short. People can retire at very early ages. And it's astounding how fast the civil service can be depleted by people who just say, okay, I had enough of this. I'll stay until I can retire, and then I'll retire. Right. And that kind of thing does go on.
Yeah.
I mean, even if they were all willing to come back, a new government comes in, and you're still years away from restoring what's been lost. Budgets have changed. Configurations of the budgets have changed. Money's moved out of one department into another. That doesn't get fixed automatically when a new president comes in.
But, well, you know, I'll try to the silver lining over here.
Of course. You're so optimistic.
I'll try to add a ray of hope, which is, look at what happened when Obama came in, and all the people, including myself, by the way, you know, who were kind of interested for the first time in serving for the government because they wanted to do something. Hmm. And, you know, a lot of those people ended up, at least, you know, parts of the government I know about, in the Office of Science and Technology Policy and the federal R&D agencies and other kind of scientific areas, and did a big thing.
But you had a visionary leader. You had somebody who was new and exciting. Are you going to have that this time?
Well, but you also had a...
No, but, you know, but when he's gone, you know, you might get that. You never know.
But he was a Democrat, and Democrats at their core believe in a strong, solid government. And I think, to Fran's point, I think she's exactly right. I think every single one of these candidates running for president right now will make it a top priority to re-energize government and to refill those seats as fast as possible. And I think that they will rally people around them that will be excited about serving government again. I think it will happen.
I hope so.
Bruce writes to us, and the topic is disparity of wealth. Many of the problems we face originate with the growing disparity of wealth between the top 0.1%. Our government has been bought, frankly, for a senator or representative to be elected. It requires knuckling under to moneyed interests. Sophisticated propaganda and brainwashing techniques have divided us as a people. How do you communicate with people who won't read, watch, or listen to any media outlet other than those approved by their perceived champions? We are in trouble.
Can I take that one? Because I think it relates to the previous letter and the optimistic comments we heard. There's a difference now that Obama doesn't face. When a new person comes in, and I hope that is soon, it isn't just revitalizing. It's like fighting against people who really now are very opposed to us. We've never had polarization like this. And there's resistance to everything they do, even if it's optimistic and for the best. You have to sell that. And I just don't see it happening quickly. quickly or easily. I look at Italy after Berlusconi, did not recover. The civil discourse is broken. Institutions are broken. The damage has been massive. I mean, really, what would it take even to, right. to it would take weeks to undo all the executive orders that he's put into place.
Well, Italian politics have always been problematic, Rosemary, right?
As opposed to Americans not being?
Well, you did have an administration with Obama, which has just been mentioned. So, but let's get away from the Italian thing. I think that the House of Representatives has proven itself now that they have taken, you know, this idea that all money controls politics and we can never have an even chance. I think what we see with the House is that if the Senate goes Democratic, and the presidency goes Democratic, you'll see some substantial changes.
I mean, it will take time. I mean, to Rosemary's point, it's not going to happen overnight because the damage has been done in a very vast and great way. But I think there will be a huge energy there and lots of support to rebuild it as fast as possible. I mean, we must not forget, however, that the one thing that will not change in the long run is the Supreme Court. The damage that he has done there, at least from a Democratic progressive perspective like mine, is one that is not changeable in the short term.
Yeah.
I mean, I understand the discouragement, Rosemary, and I feel that too. But, you know, without hope, you're dead. You know, you're just dead meat. And I do think
that has occurred to me.
You're not, though. I'm looking at you. You're very alive.
I do think that, you know, if a new president comes in and can energize people and create some momentum, you know, people will do the extraordinary. And it'll take a bunch of time, but we could get back.
Well, let's talk again about the crop of Democrats we're looking at to be that inspired, energizing person.
Well, that's
person.
What scares me. I don't see anybody who energizes me quite yet, but, you know.
Well, energizing people to get yourself elected is a lot different than energizing people after you're elected to join your team and be part of it. I mean, it's two different skills, I think. I mean,
is it Barack Obama energized people when he began running? People immediately who had been for other Democrats said, no, he's the one. He sparked deep feelings, deep emotions. And then as a leader, he did the same. I don't think they're separate.
I agree with Rosemary, and I'll tell a story that will make you be happy that this is my last day for a while, which is my family was completely split on the Barack versus Hillary primary and first time around. And, you know, but for myself, I was a Hillary girl. But the more I heard Barack, I thought Hillary could play the game well. I thought she was an expert at the game. And I think that's important. But Barack inspired me that he could change the game. And I ended up voting for him. He ended up being my guy because he inspired me during those really, really early days.
Okay, with that in mind, Fran, who you got now? Who's inspiring you now?
Well, so that's what I'm saying. You know, I'm like,
there are
people that make sense to me. There's people whose politics make sense to me. I like, you know, Elizabeth Warren's earnestness, and I like the fact that she's thoroughly researched all the stuff she talks about. I think Amy Klobuchar has been effective and actually is probably the most technologically oriented one of the bunch. Mayor Pete is adorable. Please don't run. Get it this time. I think Julian Castro is kind of interesting. I think Kamala Harris is kind of interesting. I'm not as interested in either Bernie or Biden, but none of them inspire me the way Obama did.
Well,
I have to say.
We can all agree that we could really use another Barack Obama in this campaign, but he's not there. So one of these individuals is going to have to find a way to energize enough people to get elected, and I'm confident that one of them will, and I'm confident that when they get in office, they're all capable of energizing the American public to believe in government again, and I think they'll do that.
See, I am spoken so like cynical. I think Barack Obama began the problem we're in now, this idea that an outsider, someone who's new and different and inspiring, would change everything, and it doesn't work that way.
It doesn't work.
It does not work.
That
I want someone
who
knows
well before. That went back well before I mean, you could say Kennedy did that.
Yeah,
I
that's
mean,
true.
But they all do that. They
and
all.
Reagan. I mean, that,
and they
all
weren't
talk
really
about
outsiders
themselves
either.
As an outsider.
So and so you look at Hillary, who ran as, I know the system. I can get things done. Nobody will pull anything on me. And that's what I want. What's wrong
that's
with experience?
I'm with you. I want experience,
so,
too.
Hey, so George Bush was experienced. He was a governor of a state.
Alan, go ahead.
So is there somebody out? So is there somebody out there, with all our discouragement about what we got, who could win? I have said from the beginning that Mrs. Obama could win, without question. She's got the ability.
She so doesn't want to do it.
That's right. But on the other hand, a lot of people did want to go in the Army who had to, World War II and all the rest of it. So
we're
going to
draft,
you know,
a president.
I don't know if we get to do that.
It could still happen. I mean, it's not too late. You never know.
But, well,
she's doing Netflix movies now.
Yeah, well.
Come on.
Okay.
She spent eight years doing another one
who's like inspiring, like Aim Higher and all this. No, get down in the dirt and do the work. I want an experienced, smart, vicious woman or man.
All I'm saying is that there is somebody out there who could do this, could ignite the imagination.
Alan, I'll bring up one other thing. Hillary Clinton was one of the most popular women in America when she was not running. Then she became a candidate, and that popularity dropped. And if Michelle Obama ever got over her own instincts, which I hope she doesn't, and ran, you would see popularity plummet. You'd see all that she's really a man attacks on her again. You would.
That's
it would
so
be awful.
Misogynistic.
Prime Minister of New Zealand, that's who we want.
Well, yeah, she's good. She's
good. A top woman who could win, that's why. That's my response.
She's
to you,
not a
Rosemary.
Politician. She's completely unqualified for the job.
Oh,
yeah, we don't
about?
Care about
she's
that anymore. In president.
What are you talking about? She's not a politician. She's been
Michelle
first
Obama.
Lady of the United. She's been the first lady of the United States.
That
for
is
eight
not
years.
A don't, political job.
That
at all.
Is a political job. Don't kid yourself. And
it's
the
a
book
fashion
she wrote
job.
Is a political. Come on,
no.
Rosemary.
Look, at she was the most educated first lady we ever had. She's an expert on health care. She was a hospital administrator. And what did she do as first lady? She advocated for healthy vegetables and eating. Come on.
No. Rosemary, you and Alan are both right.
Wrong?
You're both right, actually, because it can be a fashion job. I mean, lots of people take that, but, you know, there are some experience. But what you really want is a president with federal experience. I mean, get serious. Look at Trump.
Well,
look at everybody
really
who has walked into this job without experience. And
correct.
You don't want beginner's mistakes for, you know, most
correct.
Of their first term of presidency.
Correct.
Well,
and I don't think being first lady is what you're going to
get is Donald Trump again if you continue with that stuff. I mean, Michelle Obama is a politician. Apparently, she was giving a lot of advice to the president and where he ought to go. And he acknowledges that. You read the book, you get the idea of all of that. You know, come on, you need somebody who can win.
Okay, Melania could win.
That's very helpful.
Don't go there.
Yeah, I don't think first ladies are where I want to pick my presidents from.
That's very helpful.
But we have many candidates. There are many candidates on the Democratic side who are running, who are serious, and that's who we choose from. But if you compare them to a question that we ask a lot over and over again through history is you want charisma and you want the wow factor. And I mean, we certainly got that with President Trump, but so, A, are you going to find somebody who's going to be able to match that in a general election campaign? I don't know. But B, you know, you got a lot of really good people. I don't know who else you can go at that want the job. Because, I mean, that's the other thing, too. I mean, anybody who wants it's got to be a little nuts, too, right?
Yeah, but I still wish that Bloomberg wanted to run. I do. I think.
No,
I think,
I think
yeah.
I
know.
He
agree.
Did want to run.
But
he
do you
did
think
want to
he
run.
He really has what it takes to inspire
absolutely.
People more so than. I don't see Bloomberg
absolutely.
Being a greater any greater inspiration than Joe Biden or any of the rest
you're
of them.
You're such a Democratic ex state senator. All I got.
Is that a name or a fact? I don't know.
All I got to say is Bloomberg is an excellent man. He wanted to run.
I'm not discrediting that. He is an excellent man, but I don't see him being the person that stands up and plays the role of Barack Obama. I mean,
he's always done that. He's always done the things that need to be done. He just couldn't make it because he was a Republican and a Democrat, and the Democrats didn't want him, and he knew it. But he wanted to run. Everybody who knows him knows about him.
I mean, he isn't charismatic like Barack Obama.
I think he is.
But well, for me, he's not. But for me, he inspires confidence that he would take this complicated mess and really be able to make things
better. So why isn't he running?
Because he couldn't win. He was convinced he could not win.
All
of us who know the people around him and have talked to everybody know that he wanted desperately to run. He kept trying to find a way to run. But every time they did the polls, they did the other stuff, they came up short.
Yeah, but that's back to your point about people had to join the army when they didn't want to. I mean, if he really believes in the country and really wants to be the person there to save us, why isn't he stepping up to do it?
And by the way, I think the purple people would really like him. I know a lot of people who are Republican who said, you know, Bloomberg.
No, I love that idea.
If Bloomberg ran, they think he would be a good alternative to Trump.
You bet. If people believe they have the skill set to save our country right now, they should not be sitting on the sidelines. I mean, it's just this is the time to step up.
Purple people leaders.
That's right. All right. So let's marry two very different stories to one another. The MIT Media Lab, which is an elite research center at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, otherwise known as MIT, is having issues. It was revealed that its director had ties to Jeffrey Epstein, who had given money to the lab, as well as to the director's own venture capital funds. Two educators affiliated with the lab, the associate professor Ethan Zuckerman and the visiting scholar Nathan Matthias, am I right on that?
Mm-hmm.
Said this week that they would end the relationship with the Institute over its ties to Mr. Epstein, the of course, who was facing federal sex trafficking charge when he killed himself this month. How big a deal is that for MIT?
In my world, this is a huge deal. I'm seeing a lot of email all over the airwaves of people talking about the fact that Zuckerman's going to be leaving. He's a very charismatic figure who's, you know, head of the is part of the MIT Media Lab, and it really brings to mind, you know, what your stance is if you work at an institution whose practices you don't believe in. And for him, because his work has to do with disenfranchised people, with equality in cyberspace, all kinds of things like that, he really felt like he could not do that work in an institution that had taken money from Epstein.
So,
but did he know? Did he know? That's the crucial thing here is if a guy quits because he didn't know, when he didn't know, I think that's very different, don't you?
Well, first of all, he wasn't even the guy who took the money. So it was interesting that he felt that he needed to do this very, very strong response to it. But he felt,
why wasn't getting rid of the director enough?
Well, he says, so let me read from the little missive he put in the Medium. He says, my logic was simple. The work my group does focuses on social justice and on the inclusion of marginalized individuals and points of view. It's hard to do that work with a straight face in a place that violated its own values so clearly in working with Epstein and in disguising that relationship. So he really felt like he couldn't do that work at that place. You know, he put in his resignation. He'll be there for the rest of the year to complete things, and then he'll be somewhere else, maybe.
So did MIT know? That's the question.
Well, I don't know. I mean, did MIT know about Epstein's, you know, first you have to go up to the Media Lab and, you know, did the people running the Media Lab know? And then you have to ask if MIT knew. And, of course, Epstein gave money to MIT, to Harvard, to lots of other places. So the question is, did they know? And if they did or did not know, what did they do about it?
I just keep thinking there's more to the story. There was the episode that they said, no, we didn't take any money, and then that was revealed later that they actually had. And so was he involved in that or not? And I'm of the – I mean, let's –
morality.
Yeah.
I have a hard
or
time.
Or anybody.
Believing
why was there a lie? Why was he involved? And why not just take money from whatever source, no strings attached, and use it to do good? I don't get that purity of thought.
Meanwhile, Jeffrey Epstein was alone in his cell, and at least 8 Bureau of Prisons staffers knew that strict instructions had been given not to leave him alone. This is according to reports from the Washington Post. The fact that so many prison officials were aware of the directive, not just low-level correctional officers, but supervisors and managers, has alarmed investigators assessing what so far appears to be a stunning failure to follow instructions.
So don't you think this is a question of for those who have fun with conspiracy theories, is this incompetency or conspiracy?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the question.
It still just bothers me deeply from a moral point of view that of all the things that are going wrong in our prison system, that have been going wrong, of all of the just awful acts of inhumanity that have been happening in our prison system for so long now, that this is the issue all of a sudden that catches the attention.
I don't agree with you. I think you're right that this is...
You just have 30 seconds. Go ahead.
Okay, I think you're right. We have to do more on our prisons. But this one, everybody who's writing me says, you know, you can talk conspiracy all you want, says to me, obviously, the fix was in here. And I happen to think that that's a real possibility.
We are out of time. My thanks to everybody. Fran, we'll miss you.
I'll miss
Thank you very
guys
much.
Too.
Yeah.
Thanks to everyone for listening.
We'll talk to you soon, hopefully. We'll be back after this short break.